This podcast is brought to you by Art Margins, the online journal of East and Central European contemporary art. Download more podcasts and read interviews, articles, and reviews at www.artmargins.com.
This is an interview with Dmitry Vilinsky of the Petersburg-based group Что делать? The interview is being recorded in Santa Barbara on March 2nd. And I want to basically thank Dmitry for being here, for doing this interview with Art Margins. And I'd like to ask him about the activities, or maybe the state in which the group finds itself at the moment, the situation and the context in which it works at this point in time. Что делать has existed for quite some time now. So it has a sizable, long history to look back on that we can't easily recapitulate here. So I'd like to maybe jump right in and simply ask about its current situation, its current political but also artistic context in which it operates, current projects, and maybe also challenges that the group is facing in its in its attempts to frame the relationship between political intervention and art.
Okay, thank you. It's a pleasure for me to give some explanation on activity of our group. And you're right, it's quite a long story. It's about 6 years now, even more. So it's about 6.5. And as you might know from our website, that actually the task for us was to merge theory, art, and so-called activism, because actually it's a very broad notion of actually, in a humble way, describe active position. It means that we don't want just to fit into existing mainstream system, but we came out with a claim to change it. And of course it's quite heavy task, but at the same time we think that it's doable through instituting sort of alternative to show cultural world, and particular art world and academy, that another mode of production of aesthetic and critical theory is possible, somehow from below in self-organized way. So, and of course, there are some failures that happened in the period of our development, but also some achievements. First of all, we should count how the climate change happened in Russia from 2002-2003 to nowadays. And I would frankly say that we were kind of unprepared, that our expectation about kind of democratization and role of critique in contemporary public field and public sphere in Russia, we would underestimate the repression that happened and completely freezing and shrinking the public space that happened in front of our eyes despite of efforts of our group and some other people from journalism field, from academia and so on. So it was kind of hard fight that I'm not sure that we really won. But at the same time, situation is also, I mean, it's always difficult to speak about kind of particular peripheral things that are not so well known and translate them into general international debate. And it's actually also one of our main tasks, I would say. And at the same time, I would just briefly to mention, I think that the most interesting things about current Russian political situation is the incredible instability despite all declaration of power. So it doesn't matter how they pretend that everything is stable and right now in the wake of this crisis situation that nobody knows how it will be sorted out, and with appearance of second center of the power around Medvedev president, and the strange tandem between Medvedev and Putin, it really somehow slowly opens some hopes, I would say. There are some quite common speculation in political analysis about kind of new perestroika and kind of contradiction between these two leading persons. But at the same time, it's really just 6 months. I mean, last 6 months, we saw tremendous shift in politics, for example, of public television. I mean, completely controlled and censored. So, I mean, I can mention few factors from a serial The School by Guy Germanica to coverage of police abuse and violence that just 6 months ago was completely impossible to imagine. And actually, people of my generation remember quite well how perestroika started with a slight shift in TV politics that happened in Petersburg, very famous Leningradskaya televidenie. So anyway, so, and we feel ourselves as a kind of cultural artistic front of this general fight, because also there is a general imagination that Russia is very passive, people do not protest, just stay in, withdraw in a private sphere. In a certain sense it's true, but it's not the whole story. And if you really go deeper into blogging, into follow what's really happening, it's a lot of dissent, it's a lot of real campaign. It really also shows that the limits of supporting the power, the whole fake election, it also gives you something that even if officially they can't gain support in all statistic pools of almost 30% of population, okay, it's enormous mass of people. And also the level of abuse in the whole society, it's reached such a peak where all the minor small struggle could play sometimes crucial role. And our positions that, for example, just coming back to the idea of what is activism, so we respect and support different form of campaign, like civil rights movement, anti-Nazis, LGBT fights. I mean, supporting as a citizens, as a persons, culturally sharing information, but at the same time we consider that as long as we as intellectuals and as artists who has very privileged position in society, we have our own responsibility. And our task is a little bit to clean the shit at our working places. When we work in art world, in academies, because in part of our group kind of three established young philosophers, so through different form of structuring cultural activity, just offering another topic to discuss, structure seminars in another way from official, permanently challenging that conservative nationalistic agenda. So supporting students groups that appear from time to time in different situations, showing how we can produce artistic works quite differently from what accepted by mainstream of Moscow galleries and institutions. So I think we really execute kind of a pressure on existing status quo. And who knows, I mean, maybe in a few years it will be really kind of very important and acclaimed body of work. And of course, another thing is that recently, after 2-3 years, we start to be kind of good established internationally. It helps a lot to accumulate our own resources, to establish our own programs, to run publication, to maintain websites that has amazing number of visitors. So I mean, it's really, we can be compared with a middle-sized Western institution, so with about 100,000 unique visitors a year. So it's not bad. And people downloading like hell, watching videos. So it's actually right now internet played important role, very important, particularly in Russia when you cut from other forms of public activity. So I wouldn't say it's a desperate situation where we all need to run out of the country and And no, not at all. It's kind of very interesting, and because we demanding and reclaiming a certain tradition of Russian culture, like the culture of emancipation and culture of that stands behind from Decabrist to Russian Revolution and Khrushchev time. So we are really located. So we are not just fall from heaven like Western agent, you know, of modernization. Not at all. We have our own tradition, and I think it's still viable and important to work with it.
Since you were talking about tradition, the one tradition that probably comes to anybody's mind in this context is the Russian avant-garde. Mm-hmm. And one cannot help but think that in some way you seem to want to take things up at that point where the avant-garde ended it, as it were, that is to say somewhere in the late 1920s. What is your relationship with the avant-garde and its defeat, of course? I wonder if you, since you mentioned tradition, if you could say a few words about what must be quite an important relationship, because, of course, the last generation of activist, leftist, theoretically minded, civically minded artists in Russia was the generation of avant-gardists.
You know, it's a very important question. And, of course, even on superficial level, it's quite obvious that we build the whole politics, this kind of articulation of certain events in avant-garde. But at the same time, as many things, we don't take it uncritically. So, for example, the fall of the failure of avant-garde, it's quite obvious, but at the same time, it was kind of a general political failure. And at this moment, most of us completely disagree with Boris Groys, with his idea that Stalinism kind of organically continues the line of avant-garde. For us, it was always very interesting, in Benjaminian sense, consider that sort of a break, because avant-garde was, in particular, productionism and constructivism was incredibly democratic on the level of production of the space. If you watch the new architectural development project like in Petersburg and Moscow, it's incredibly democratic architecture. What happened in the 30s? It happened with all that huge marble palaces and barracks behind. It was completely another concept of the space. And of course it was a break. And with literature, with that kind of romantic socialist realism, it was completely another thing. That's why I completely disagree with Groys on that. Completely. It was a real break. It's for me the same as to say that Stalinistic politics was kind of natural result of Bolshevik Revolution. Okay, give me a break. I mean, there could be different alternative, you know? Of course, there is some tragic failure in many revolutions, but you can't just fetishize it as a necessary way to Gulag or to Stalinism. No, sorry. That's why for us it's really important to articulate certain phenomena and critically rediscover and see what we can do with them today. That's why we quite often speak in the wake of that Benjamin concept of actualization. So you took something that runs through some certain historical failure and actualize it in a new composition. For example, we work with the concept of workers' club, transforming it into activist club, and discuss how this concept can transform institutional spaces of museums and art institutions, transform them into more democratic, more open space for learning, watching, discussing. So, and we produce this sort of spaces. And of course, like Rodchenko space, it was also kind of a model. It was never realized in reality. It was just realized in the framework of this big show in Paris and then disappeared. So, of course, it's a very also suspicious and fragile affiliation with bourgeois institutions of the West. But at the same time, it's somewhere where politics is happening. You insist on your version, how art can and should develop, and contest it with another version. So, and it's fine. But back to avant-garde, I think it's also the crucial difference. For example, the idea of sublation art into life, it was really exciting. But what life was, it was life, and every day completely transformed by the event of revolution. Now I really skeptical about sublating art into that false totality of consumer capitalism. There is nowhere to go, I mean. And maybe right now, critically analyzing that historical experience, I would say that right now it's very interesting to crystallize art in variety of certain given and produced situations. That's what we are about. So I think that it's quite a crucial difference. But at the same time, you know, also we are one of the few groups, and I think it's a big failure, because Russia somehow, through that imposed isolationist, hostile politics imposed on the society from the top, where you are paranoid, enemies everywhere, Georgian enemies, Estonians enemies, Polish, everywhere, you know. Then for us it's just we are much, and then it ran into completely isolationist situation in culture, where artists just run between the gallery inside Sadovaya Circle, collector, one of oligarch inside Sadovaya Circle, or some institution of the power like Tseretelli Museum, also somewhere. And because it was kind of pumped up with money, they completely closed and have lost any contact with international scene. But in this sense, I would also maybe continue that comparison. Avant-garde was always international movement. So whatever happened in Moscow in the 20s, it was just in a few months, was kind of discussed in Berlin, and then in New York, you know, and then in Budapest. So it was really kind of network of incredibly visionary people. And right now, I would say for us, it's also important to continue that art project as international. We can't say just in Moscow valid and just that. No, it's very interesting how these ideas are circulating, developing, and each locality contributes something, some small things that return and comes in exchange. And that, it's, I think it's really exciting.
This is all very interesting. I was fascinated by your disagreements with Groys, and then your mentioning of the hermeticism, the hermetic closed culture of much of contemporary art practice in Russia. And one cannot help but think that apart from the avant-garde, there is sort of another target in a way that you perhaps define yourself against, or with whom in mind you define yourself, and that has to be on some level Moscow conceptualism and this, the whole school of Moscow conceptual art, which of course has had this very dominant influence in Russia. You yourselves originate in Petersburg, even though you have part of the group, I take it, who do work in Moscow, but it does appear as if much of what you are doing could be said to be a kind of a counter model, in a sense, to the practice of conceptual artists, who of course would take a very much more cautious view of art's ability to intervene in social life, or indeed of the need for it. And one cannot help but think that when I think of your, you know, the collectivity of your group, of course, you know, it's kind of like an anti-collective action, in a sense. And it would be quite interesting, actually, to compare.
You mean collective action as a group?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so it's quite interesting to juxtapose you with them, because, of course, even though there is collectiveness, the emphasis couldn't be more different, and the practice couldn't be more different. So I'm curious about the strategy. What I would like to know is there sort of a strategy, an artistic strategy, not just a political or activist strategy, but is there also a kind of an artistic strategy to produce a kind of a counter model to the conceptualist one, which has proven to be the dominant model, it seems, of contemporary art in Russia over the last 30 years?
Thank you. It's really a very challenging question, because frankly to say, I've never considered ourselves in a kind of direct confrontation or counter model with Moscow conceptual school or something like that. First of all, we have a big respect, because first of all, we love art, and they're great artists, and that's amazing. So, and actually, it may be the last phenomenon that internationally was deserved to be acclaimed, and it's acclaimed. I like Kabakov a lot. Like Bulatov and many other people, so I know this quite well, and different modes, Prigov, so it's really, it's amazing. But at the same time, and I also think it was a really best example how you use that historical restriction, because I'm very much against that interpretation that art is about freedom. No, art is not about that. Art is about amazing historical necessity to produce in a given historical period of time important enunciation. And for example, if we meet some important art, we understand how funny when young people are thinking it's I'm free to express myself. Come on, it's nice feeling, it's nice, but nothing else. The real artists feel that amazing historical necessity. And I think in this case, we are not in a counter mode. We really also trying to demonstrate that there is certain historical necessity right now to pursue such certain mode of producing something, collectivity, set of topics, aesthetics, and so on. Actually, in many things, we're even close to each other. For example, we also work with this kind of total installation, but in a completely different way. So I learned a lot by Kabakov how to you can organize space and so on and so on. But at the same time, you are right. Recently, I read a very interesting, actually it was online, as an informal video interview with Monastirsky. And I was quite perplexed and surprised. Of course I know, but it's always somehow, and I grew up also in that climate of late 70s, 80s, so why is it pursue such a strong withdrawing from social and any political issues. Actually, but at the same time, it's more about Monastirsky, and particularly his shift to religion and mystic and all that kind of New Age stuff. For me, it's completely a little bit weakened his ideas. He's an amazing master of that visualization, actually, still. I would say. But same time, they're all different. Kabakov is not about that. Kabakov is very social in some sense, and critically social. And particularly in that period of time, his deconstruction of Soviet ideology is very political, I would say. And Komra Milamed, you can hardly find anyone, and actually how they continue. But what we started to talk before interview, it's very interesting, that kind of form of irony, because we also use irony, but I would say that we're more kind of post-Brechtian. So we use, you know, we, Verfremdung effect, so estrangement, that really makes things look strange and political, politically more sheer, you know? That I think it's really interesting. But, I mean, so for me, I think in your question, for me, it's a very complicated generalization of conceptualism. For me, you know, we always see when some general critique see some event like the whole, we always see how it's split, how it's constructed from different positions. With someone you can relate with Prigov, for example, very interesting dialogue and his poems, it's amazing. And actually look what happened with Sorokin. He's the most, compared to other particular Moscow conceptualist artist who right now actually not young anymore, but he managed, he's actually the youngest one, I would say. He's managed to produce the most radical critique of current Russian situation, his recent novels. So I mean, for me, it's also was kind of reincarnation of that kind of power of conceptual thinking that was actually stems from the time. So I would say we are in a very strong and complex relation. So we not negate, we not counter to this model, but at the same time we really think that right now it's time to look around, to go deeper into social issue, to open up. So we are more realist in this sense, in general sense, I would say, like critical realism.
I want to come back to the previous point and press you a little bit on a point that you were making before when we discussed the avant-garde and the failure or the defeat of the avant-garde in this false sublation of art and life which you could claim socialist realism mm-hmm. was, mm-hmm. and which you argued late developed capitalism in a sense also is. Mm-hmm. So I'd like you to maybe clarify a little bit where you see concrete possibilities for intervention in that false sublation, given the situation in Russia today, where maybe that sublation is still in process in ways quite different, perhaps still from the West, although it may be already quite a situation that's comparable in many ways. But tell us a little bit about the concrete steps, interventionist, activist, whatever you want to call them, that you feel can be taken by artists, not by journalists, not by dissident politicians, not by community organizers, but specifically by artists. I mean, when one hears you speak, often it's difficult to see where does the specificity of artistic practice come in. Everything you say makes perfect sense, but I wonder, or is it not necessary to talk about any artistic specificity? Because this is my question and maybe a certain amount of lack of clarity.
Yeah, I mean, maybe your question is very typical. It's the question that we mostly addressed in Russia, where we unfortunately had recently very few opportunities to exhibit our works. Mm. And particularly in the West, such question never arise, where you presented the best Biennale, biggest museum with huge pieces, and your films are collected, and there is no such a question. So, because we made some small career in the West, not because we have a big mouth, you know, and whoever can do that. I mean, it's just because we managed to produce a crucial artistic contributions that actually no one else produced in such a way, like most of important artists ever do. So, and I mean, we developed very much concentrated on video and film. So we published heaps of newspapers totally dedicated to aesthetic subtleties, like Great Method, Making Film Politically, and so on and so on. So it's really, we are very much into aesthetic debate. What kind of art, what kind of realism possible today? So that's, I think it's really crucial. How to organize the spaces and the exhibition, so I think it's very practical matters. But at the same time, what distinguishes us from other people, so for us it's very important to kind of transversal redistribution of our works. For example, our newspaper, it's not art piece. It could be art piece, but it's not only. It's some piece of knowledge that people can gain free online, read with, promoted through seminars and so on. It's really important. All our films, we work under public license. So it means that all our stuff is online, free to distribute for non-commercial purposes. And it's also kind of form, sort of, because we really, compared to kind of general, whatever, stupid mainstream model of art as a kind of unique commodity, we're not about that. We really think that art is something that can change people's consciousness. For us, it's a very special production of very special knowledge that people gain not just with their brains, but with their whole bodies, emotions, and so on. So I think this is crucial. And we are developing, so we're right now in new film productions and doing graphics, installation. And actually what is interesting also, back to your discussion on conception, we are very conceptual. For example, our political conceptualism, it can be considered as also kind of very clear tradition from American conceptualism of 60s, you know, and also enriched through that kind of romanticism of Russian conceptualism or Soviet, whatever you call it. And right now we also do sometimes, we can work with the words, you know, it's acclaimed medium. It was acclaimed by through conceptualist practices. So I work a lot with the postures and so on. And they're distributed. So, I mean, alternatively. And also we, luckily, because of that kind of unarticulated Berufsverbot that we are not exhibiting in Russia, we are not welcome, all our proposals are not banned, but not considered to be worse because we tackle kind of a little bit social topics and politics. So it's not about that even kind of censorship. It's not welcome, that particular mainstream of that galleries. They don't want to see it. For them, it's not art. For them, art is not about that. Art should something high. It's kind of silent object. That's why the old Moscow scene became incredibly formalistic. It's about production of kind of fixed commodities like Osmolovsky or whoever, even Gutev. It's very fixed practices. So very much actually against conception, anti-conceptualist in many sense. And for us, it's really important to disturb and also to change the public. That, for example, when we do something, I'm very happy to see, again, like in Soviet time, at the exhibition, intelligentsia, the people who are mathematicians, who are sociologists, who has nothing to do with that professional vernissage crowd, who just hang around to have a new contract or sell some piece. We don't see this. Assholes, sorry. I really don't want to see them. I don't want to see these collectors. I don't want to see these galleries. And we don't see them. And they don't see us. And that's fine. Because actually we have another places to articulate our works in the proper way. And of course this particular bring us into notion of new Russian bourgeoisie that you can hardly find anything more disgusting. With the Western one, you can communicate because they kind of, they have some ideas about public, about social responsibility. Sometimes in a good progressive way, but with Russia, dead end. It's totally dead scene. And it's also poison.
So in a sense, you see yourself as creating a critical public, yeah? Or as helping to create a critical public in the good tradition of the Russian intellectual.
Absolutely.
So would you say that in a sense you're closer to something like the Wanderers? Or, much of what you say seems to kind of go along those lines. That is to say, a sort of staunch belief in Enlightenment values. Much of post-conceptual art in the West, of course, has been devoted to specific identity types of different types of identity politics. So the second question maybe I have, apart from this business of establishing a genealogy in Russian intellectual history, would be, it seems like instead of talking about specific group identities, you seem to go back to a more classical model of kind of Marxist analysis of society. And I wonder if that would be another point of reference if one were to try and find a historical context in which to locate you. The Wanderers on the one hand, and then a kind of a Marxist analysis of social relations on the other.
It's a good reference. I would admit that really completely rooted. So Wanderers, Prelizhniki, and Marx is very important sources. But at the same time, I would say, of course, we are not just, as again, bring us back, so we not just replicate or just simply continue the line. No, it's about actualization. The actual tradition was broken. We can't take it for granted. So. The same with Marxism. So, I mean, because actually we are the first one who started to, let's say, upgrade, because we really, for example, we from the beginning see that the issue of class composition is not clear anymore. It's not just simply speculate there is a bourgeoisie and there is a kind of proletariat with a big mission. We right now have to redefine what is the class composition. But compared to speculation on classless society, our point of departure, no, classes exist. Come on, go to the first grade sociology school and you understand that class structure is there. That how you determine that the subject who is moving something. Of course it's not male industrial white worker anymore. And we were really started with upgrading that sort of things. I don't think we make kind of amazing intellectual discoveries. No, I mean, we're part of this debate. This debate happened in Italy, in States, everywhere. We're in a very complex historical moment. It's a moment of reaction, but it's our time. So we should really try to do our best and recognize its particularities of the moment. So, and I think at the same time, you know, Of course, many things like gestures are respond considered differently. For example, at certain moments, still in Russia, insist on that kind of Marxist roots of critical theory. It's important sometimes because it's kind of refreshing sometimes, and also in the history of that stupid distortion of Soviet Marxism, and you have to again clean this field to get some ideas of knowledge. So, and wondrous it's really for us. Such amazing example. But at the same time, right now you don't need to go to villages, you know, to small cities to make kind of traveling exhibitions. You can use different kind of alternative means of distribution, all, as I mentioned, online blogging and so on. It really influenced people.
But of course, like you, the Wanderers had this amazing belief in the kind of analytical and revelatory power of art. Yeah,
that I think we share.
Kind of a real idealism that you, it seems to some extent you share. Yeah, it seems like you have this idealist streak.
You know, I wouldn't call it idealism because, you know, I mean, in the wake of Althusser, we can see the ideas kind of material force in society. And maybe also share that kind of beliefs of Bolsheviks that ideology and superstructure really have big influence on how economic and political and real material processes are happening. So absolutely, so it's also bring us maybe too much into discussion about power and economy. Yes, but I wouldn't call it idealistic. I think it's very material. For example, if I would really see that I mentioned in my talk, or maybe it was later. So, for example, right now we have a group about 10 people and broader platform about 150. But I'm quite sure if such groups like ours, for example, just in Petersburg, it would be just 3-4 groups with the same amount of people who could make kind of core work. You know, it would be about 50 people in the city. We could change the whole culture of politics, do whatever. The problem is that maybe our goal is not to educate masses, but a little bit to trigger and facilitate becoming of that maybe new 50 people. And I think this task is possible. One day. And then, you know, you don't need thousands. You need something, and that it will be changed, you know. Then you'll see how the language in public sphere is changing. How things that before, for example, was a very interesting case, maybe we can discuss, I don't know if you need it for, like Beliaev-Kintov, you know. Through the 90s, this crap, this fascist bullshit was completely acceptable through new academies. We were the only one who was fighting. It was accepted like new Bolshevik party. All that mode of Russian kind of weird fascism was kind of mainstream. And only now, when Beliaev got this Kandinsky Prize, there was kind of consolidation between open space liberals, our group, some socialist groups, who said, stop it. And we did a good campaign. Deutsche Bank had to apologize. Right now they're really a little bit ashamed. I would really expect better effect. I hope that they will not make any more this Kandinsky Prize. We wanted to crash it. So, but it was something at least, you know? And Beliaev really ruined his career. So finally, he was supposed to be exhibited in Russian pavilion at Venice Biennale. Sviblo couldn't take him because it would be a scandal. And so on, you know? And they publish a catalog when they don't mention the winner, you know? That was really something. I think he's completely pissed off, you know? So, but, I mean, it's small change. Because in the 90s, it was really kind of, absolutely kind of status quo. Establishment. Now it's still, they managed to sell, they have galleries who represent them, but at the same time, it's a little bit, you know, like dirty things, hopefully.
Last question. Yes. Tell us what you're doing at the moment. What's your current project? Oh. What are you working on?
Our current project, it's a really big Zongspiel, because as you might see, Zongspiel.
Zingspiel,
yeah. Zongspiel, Zingspiel. We produce already two, one on Perestroika.
Like an opera.
Mm-hmm. It's really very heavy film production, very expensive, unfortunately. And this time we are doing one piece that would, from our point of view, kind of visualize and embrace the whole totality of current situation in Russia. It will be very angry piece. The point of departure, the case study is construction of the Gazprom Tower in Petersburg, how societies resist, how people are completely repressed, and so on and so on. It will be really something.
That's what this opera is about?
Yeah. No, but you know, it's kind of point of departure, then okay. We'll tackle all things of ideology, repression, police, and construction of society.
And will it be staged, or is it just a film?
You see, I mean, it's difficult to explain quickly. So we produced already two Zongspiels, and they're a big success. I mean, they're everywhere. And right now, we are doing new piece that kind of built a triptych out of first two. And also it will be very much related to Perestroika, because it's 20 years later, and you'll see what happens with our characters from first Zongspiel. So this is one. Then we have kind of commission for a new film in Netherlands on museums and avant-garde, actually. And we are actually doing a very provocative publication, because we would like to tackle the possibilities of contemporary tragedy. Because tragedy is kind of a closed format, particularly for political activistic stuff. And we already somehow in our Zongspiels already reached that kind of possibility to reach that sublime and origins of contemporary tragedy. And we would like to problematize it, if it's possible. And also, we would like to run a big publication on possibilities of representation. So if we have a world around, we all speculate like Brian Gone. So, but at the same time, art is about symbols. You know, it's about completely another abstract symbolic order. How this order relate to what happened in reality? So, for example, it also reflect a lot of my reservation on the side of kind of political analytical art, because what they represented is just nothing. The power of journalism is much stronger. So we have as an artist to find another way to speak up about these things. So I'm realist in this sense, but I think art has its own power and to speak about whatever. But at the same time, it should be articulated differently. Something like that.
Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you. It was very good.